Welcome to The Resties, a video game podcast about the... Oh no, I forgot to put a new tagline.
We're not using any of the ones that we came up with last week, so maybe we'll just leave this one blank.
I think, you know, it's a feeling. You know, we can't put it into words so much as you can just feel it.
What do you think about ba-da-ba-ba-ba, I'm loving The Resties?
I like that. I don't think we're going to get sued at all. And break me off a piece, that Resties podcast.
Yep. What's your name?
Hey, everybody. My name is Christopher Thomas Plant.
I'm Russ Frushtick.
Welcome to The Resties. Today, we are talking about a whole bunch of great stuff. There are so many great video games out right now that you will wonder why we spent 30 seconds riffing on slogans from famous fast food and snack chains. We have Forza Horizon 5. We have Riders Republic. And that's just the first half. After that, we've got PlayStation 5 and Xbox Series S and X. We're looking at them on their first birthdays. How did they do for the first year? Did anybody actually manage to buy one? These are the questions we'll answer. And
are they walking yet?
Are they? Oh, I hope not. That would be... I guess, no, that would be good. That would be about right on track. And as always, we'll talk about what else we've been playing. And at the end of the show, we'll share our recommendations of the week. So just to start, Forza Horizon 5 and Riders Republic, they are both open world racing games. Forza Horizon 5 is focused on automobiles, if you will. While Riders Republic is more, well, I would say natural, except for there's a jet pack in it, which I can't imagine is good for the environment.
It's more people-powered.
Yes, it's extreme sports-based. Yeah. And we will be talking about both of them. We're going to compare and contrast, like this is some sort of SAT essay, but more fun, right after this. Okay, so, Fresh, this is my week. You know, do you feel like it's my week?
Yeah, it should be noted you also had the Rise Tales of Rise weeks. So you've been a little birthday boy for a while now. But I will say, even though I went into this week knowing what the assignments were, a little hesitant, I actually came out of it quite enjoying myself. So we're going to get into it.
Okay, but, so which one did you enjoy the most?
Oh, that is a good question. Okay. I mean,
encouraging already. I thought you would have an immediate answer, and then I would be
okay. So I'll say where I'm leaning towards, just as a starting point. But I do think it's actually closer than you might imagine. The game that I enjoy most is probably Forza Horizon 5.
Okay,
but I actually enjoy the minute-to-minute gameplay of Riders Republic more. But there are things that Forza does much, much, much better than Riders Republic, even though they are like bizarrely the same game. Like the whole trappings of both games is there's this like goofy like party in the desert or party in the mountains, and everyone's like rocking and rolling. It's like whatever, Burning Man, but everyone loves their vehicles and they all gather together to do a variety of races and stunts in the middle of nowhere in like an open world setting. Both games have that as their trapping. So it's very bizarre to go back and forth.
Yeah. Well, let's start with Riders Republic then, because I do agree that it has a bit more flaws. And then we can kind of like compare that to Forza Horizon, how I think it kind of remedies some of the issues with Riders Republic.
And then maybe by the time we get to Forza Horizon, I'll be able to say it like you do, which is the proper Italian pronunciation.
Oh, I hope that you reach that peak one day. Yeah, Riders maybe. Republic, for people who don't know, which might be more people, because this is the sequel to a game called Steep that I loved. And that
is it the sequel?
Played. I mean, it's not. It's a spiritual sequel.
Sure.
So Steep was open world. You could go wherever you want, and you could change through all these different winter sports. You were on a whole bunch of mountains. Here, you are in a recreation of over a half dozen national parks in the United States. So there are mountains, there are, like you said, kind of like desert areas. And you can mountain bike, you can road bike. There are more things than biking. You can wingsuit.
There's a wingsuit. There's
you can still pack. Ski and snowboard.
Ski, snowboard, yeah, yep.
Jetpack, all of these different things. And it's kind of a mishmash of Steep and then a game that I think a lot of people have probably forgotten called The Crew 2, which is a racing game that let you change vehicles whenever you wanted.
Oh, yeah.
So in this game, you could be a jetpack and then change into Animorph style a person on a road bike and then just hit the pavement going like 150 miles per hour. It doesn't always end well for you. So there's a lot of room for playfulness, which they incorporate in the game at its best. The game is great when the playfulness is coming from the actual experience of play.
Yeah.
It is very bad when it is when it's trying to kind of like conjure playfulness from what it thinks extreme sports are in 2021.
Yeah, so let's talk about, just to start at the positive, let's talk about like an example of a mission or whatever, a race that you think sure. matches that really well.
Yeah, so for me, the multi-sports races are my favorite. So that'll be like you against, you know, a dozen or so AI characters that I think, similar to Forza, are based off of...
Like friends on your list.
Friends on your list and how they play asynchronously. So you'll be going down. You'll start at the top of a mountain and you'll be skiing all the way down. And then you'll get to the bottom of the mountain. There's no more snow. And you'll jump off some ramp. And while you're mid-sky, you will change into an off-road biker. So then you'll be biking through the forest down into the valley. And then when you get into the valley, you hit another ramp, and then to get back up the mountain, you turn into a jet suit, and suddenly you are just zipping around this landscape. And it's all close to seamless. There's like a kind of like a half a second goof whenever you switch things, so it doesn't feel like exactly like, your propulsion from one is going to the next.
Yeah.
But, you know... considering the magic of being able to do this in the first place, pretty excusable.
Yeah, it's pretty good.
Yeah, that works for me really well. I'm curious for you, did you try any of the like 40-person races or however many people?
Yep, I did. I don't know if it's always this number, but the one that I did was 60 people at once. It's like online, so they're all real players. It kind of reminds me of playing Fall Guys or something like that, where you just have 60 people jammed into a very small snowboarding track and everyone's sort of bouncing around. So that was like goofy. I got, no joke, 58th place in a race of 60 people. Like you would think, and genuinely tried, and I don't think I screwed up that much. And it made me think, like, is it using, or like, do all these people have better gear than me? Or am I just like that terrible? Or I don't understand how the game works. Even though I got 58th place, I still had a lot of fun. Like, it was goofy to see everyone, like, bouncing around. I mean, I'm not that competitive in that sort of situation, so it's fine. I don't mind losing. I didn't have an urge to ever do that again. But it was kind of a fun, like, jump into something wacky. And I think that matches what you were talking about with the spirit of the game, like, feeling wacky. And there were other, like, things, too, where... just the things you unlock, like by exploring the world, you get like half of a wing of a plane that you can then use a jetpack. Or I think, there's like rocket skis you can unlock or skis made of like wooden sticks. So like that goofiness I'm really into. I think it's now time to talk about the thing that was like the biggest turnoff for me is they... paired that with, and you kind of alluded to this earlier, with, I can only describe this as, you know how in like GTA or Saints Row, there'll be those side missions where you're given like a mission by someone that's like clearly meant to be a douchebag, like not a cool person, like an idiot.
Yeah.
This game is filled with characters like that. Like everyone you like that talks to you is exactly like that. but they are presented as like lovable rapscallions that are like funny and like having a good time when they say like, yo, let's listen to some Toonskies, brah. And that is like every single character that you meet in the game. And most of those interactions are not skippable. And they are just like, just let me go back to the races, y'all. It shouldn't be there. So whoever, I'm sorry, but like whoever decided to inject narrative into this game really needs to go back to the drawing board because it is painful.
Yeah, and it's not even that the choice to put narrative in it is inherently bad.
No, no, you can do that well. I think Forza does it well, actually.
Yeah, the slang here is, I truly don't know what happened. It's honestly hard for me. At first, I was like, oh, wow, they must have had somebody much older than even us write this.
Yeah.
Like, some of the slang they're using, early on, they referred to something as brand spanking new. Which was outdated when brand spanking new Doug appeared on Disney's One Saturday Morning when I was like a kid. So I don't know who comes up with that. And then my like, there's part of me that wonders, you know, Ubisoft games are made around the world, right? Like that there's people making it in Montreal and there are people making it in, I don't know, Prague or wherever else. And I wonder if it was made by somebody who isn't from the United States or even like North America and they were Googling terms or like,
yeah, there have been times where like there's been like a French based development studio and they've tried to recreate American culture. Heavy Rain is the example that I always think, not a Ubisoft game, but like that is a good example of like, clearly something is not quite right about this version of Philadelphia, and this game kind of reeks of that. It also reeks, the writing reeks of just like, you know, they talk about first thought and how you should avoid just using the first thought. Every line in this game is like the first thought you would come up with for like, how are we going to set up this mission? Just something totally half-assed and lazy, and let's move on to the next thing because we have a ton of dialogue to get through. And that's just like the entire spirit of the game.
Yeah.
If it was skippable, I really wouldn't care, but it's not. So I care. And you have to listen to a lot of it. You know, SSX, which I think this game has a lot of similar DNA to SSX. And I love those games. But SSX also like did a pretty good job of like not making all of the dialogue super painful. Who was it? DJ Atomica? That guy that would like pop on. And he was like goofy. But fine. Here it's just now. But thankfully, you know, you have the gameplay to fall back on, and the gameplay is quite fun.
Yeah, yeah, and I think I just kind of have accepted the visual aesthetic of I don't know what to call it, Fortnite chic.
Yeah,
it's like, oh, get it? You're dressed up as a mascot, but you're on skis. Can you believe it? A T-Rex skiing. It's like, yeah, I guess I can.
I do want to take issue with that specific thing, and this is a big-time Ubisoft thing that they really have a terrible reputation for. Whether you like the mascot stuff or not, it should be noted that like all of the relatively normal customization stuff, so like you're wearing a shirt and, well, you know, snowboarding pants and stuff like that, you can unlock just by playing the game and you earn currency and so on and so forth. Anything that's like out there and weird, like the T-Rex or like the giant giraffe or whatever, is all premium currency. It's all premium currency. And the fact that you have this game that you're charging probably $70 for the next gen version, and the fact that you are like locking people out from accessing the more interesting visual customizations, whether they're your taste or not, is pretty gross. And Ubisoft has for a long time been pretty gross with microtransactions. And this is just kind of one example of it, where you really should, I realize maybe not everything needs to be accessible through in-game, but like you shouldn't lock all of the good stuff behind premium currency. That just isn't cool.
Yes, I agree. So I think the way to enjoy this game for me is to avoid the game of it all. It is a big open world. And pretty rapidly as you play, you do unlock all of these different modes of transportation.
Yeah.
And just going around the world, uncovering what it has to offer, which the game kind of does gamify too. And there are like monuments to be found and natural landmarks, stuff like that.
Yeah, I had fun finding that stuff.
Yeah, and I think like that for me is when the game is at its best. I guess I break a lot of video games down into work games and weed games. And I don't say like weed games like you have to smoke weed to enjoy them. But they are games that are about kind of entering a trance.
Sure.
And I think like I wish more games of this scale recognized when they were a weed game instead of a work game. By work game, I mean, you know, Destiny, where yeah. you sign on and it's like you have to do all of this stuff and we're constantly giving you things to like measure yourself by. And this is not that type of game. It shouldn't be in any way. They've created this amazing, gorgeous world that you can just speed through. And that momentum is the pleasure of the game. And every time they get in the way of that momentum and slow things down, often quite literally with those cutscenes, that really hurts it. I think that actually can kind of help us transfer to Forza Horizon 5, which maybe threads the needle of work game and weed game better than any game in history has done that. So Forza Horizon 5, the way this one works is where Riders Republic was a lot of human-propelled extreme sport vehicles or devices or whatever in the national parks of the United States. Forza Horizon 5 is automobiles, gas and electric powered, in Mexico and all across it. It is a massive, massive map. Not one for one, obviously, but quite large. And it is filled with cars and trucks and anything that moves on the ground outside of, I guess, there aren't motorcycles.
There aren't motorcycles in the game?
You race
I saw some.
Against them, but I don't think you can drive any.
Okay, maybe a DLC.
Yeah, I think that was how they did it in previous Forza Horizons too. Yeah. So when I mentioned like this being a work and weed game, what I mean by that is this game, after the first, 2 hours, just lets you make it whatever you want. There are so many things to do in this game, so many variants. There's an arcade mode where you can do all sorts of silly stuff. There's really intense, almost sim-style racing. There's off-road racing. You can go and collect cars. You can set off speed traps. There's just gobs and gobs and gobs and gobs of stuff to do. And if it'll be anything like Forza Horizon 4, they will be adding stuff to it for years. That'll just keep going. So if you want to make this a zone-out game, it is one of the most beautiful open worlds ever created, and it will accommodate that. You can just zip around it. But if you want to make this a work game, holy moly, will it let you do that, because every single car can be upgraded in a gajillion ways, whether that is like actually tuning it or giving it these XP-based upgrades, so that you could sink hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of hours into this video game.
Yeah, that's about right. I'm very selective in terms of the racing games that I get into. Usually it's just, in terms of car racing games, just Burnout. Like Burnout Paradise, Burnout Takedown, Burnout Revenge, those were like the only racing games that I really got hardcore into. And I even played a little bit of Forza Horizon 4 and liked it, but there was something, I think the intro, the beginning of it was after that like first race where they show you a bunch of different cars, kind of slow for me, where I felt like I was kind of tottering around a very small area.
The setting is the weakest of the bunch too.
Yeah. Whereas this, the setting is really quite remarkable. You've got like volcanoes and you've got the deserts and you've got like beaches and oases,
jungles.
And it's amazing. But also I think the pacing of it is very smart, because they do, I think, give you a lot more freedom earlier on than the last game did to go off and do whatever you want. I will say, like, it was a little intimidating, and it took me a couple hours to, like, even know how I wanted to play the game. I remember early on, I, like, started a race, and it was like, what car would you like to use? And I just picked showed all the cars in my garage, and I had, like, 12 of them, and one of them had the biggest number, so I did that.
Oh, no.
And I did the race, and I think it was 12 racers, and I got 12th, and it was not even close. And what was even more infuriating is that I could see your little drivatar in the distance just, like, mocking me, because it was so... I almost got lapped. It was, like, that bad, because I picked a McLaren on, like, wet road in a tiny, like, tight turning race.
Oh, no.
It was just the worst possible thing. And I was like, okay, maybe I should start paying attention to, like, all-wheel drive versus not, off-road versus not. Maybe, stuff like that. So once I sort of learned the game, it got much more approachable and enjoyable for me.
Yeah. Here's my advice for people who are listening and you're like, hey, I don't normally play this sort of thing, but I think I'm going to give this a try. One, you should, because you can fine tune the difficulty, everything down to, like, actually slowing down the speed of the game to make this playable. And also, there is a vehicle for you in this game. So the McLaren, if you're new to this, not for you.
Yeah, bad.
But think about it, like, what would you feel comfortable driving if you were just starting? And that gets you a lot closer. So an all-wheel drive, maybe something like a rally car with that's not a drift car. It'll say if it focuses on drifting. Anything that has good handling and is going to kind of stick to the ground. Because that, I'm sure, is what you ran into. Is that when you drive a McLaren or a sports car, if you're not constantly, like, basically, one, letting off the gas, and then two, very, very, very delicately turning and fluttering the brake, you are...
Yeah, no, I wasn't doing that.
You're spun out everywhere.
It's also... Yeah, yeah, yeah. The other tip that I have for people is... And this is kind of a weird Forza thing, so maybe you can explain why they do this. The shittier the car you... Like, if you pick a shitty car, so, like, a Ford truck, like, beater... Yeah. And you bring that into a race, all the other racers will also use that shitty car, and the races get, like, way easier.
I don't know if they use literally the same car. Well, but so I think they do try
in
to
the
match
same category. Category.
Yeah, 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 yeah. That sounds about right.
What was good about it is that after I had that awful McLaren experience, I, like, dialed it back. I picked, like, a B-rank car or a C-rank car, whatever. I earned back my confidence by, like, totally creaming, like, 6 or 7 different races in a row. And then I was like, okay, I think maybe I can try an A now. And I, like, started dipping into harder cars. And, like, that was kind of a more welcoming way to do it. I do almost think that there might... There should be a little more direction for new people like that, because it is overwhelming to just kind of guess. But maybe if you're listening to this and you think you're going to try it, let me be your direction.
Yeah. And the other good thing about trying this is now you can, like, switch your cars on the fly. You're constantly getting new cars.
Oh, could you not do that before?
I believe you had to go, I could be wrong here, but I believe you had to go back to, like, wherever a event center was to change them.
Okay.
Or you had to, like, pay for it in, like, in-game tickets. I it's been a while since I played the last one.
Yeah.
This game's on Game Pass. If you have Game Pass, I would give this a download. Again, try, like, 3 or 4 cars and just zip around the world. You do not need to go do races.
Yeah.
The way that you will find out if you like this game, if you don't like this genre, is just by zipping around. And then once you feel comfortable with it and you're having fun just doing that, then try whichever race sounds appealing to you. A lot of the early ones are kind of designed to feel like Fast and the Furious type of stuff. So they're, like, easier and a bit more playful anyway. But for me, what I love about Forza Horizon 5 and the Horizon series versus just general Forza is the way it feels... I don't know how to describe this very well. You can feel the ground underneath you. Does that make sense? Like,
I guess because you're really off-road more, so you feel like the shakes of the...
Yeah, and all the different textures. Like, if I'm off-road or if I'm going through water or it's, like, a slick road, I always... I don't know. It's weird how I know I'm not literally feeling it, but something about it, I'm blanking on the term where you, like, mix one sensation with another, where, like, I'm seeing it, but I can feel it somehow.
Synesthesia?
Yeah. There's, like, a synesthesia happening where I really feel the ground in this game in a way that I don't in most games, where I don't think that's a thing that they even care about.
I think the physics are spot on, which is part of the reason you feel that way. And then obviously there's rumble and visual effects as well when you're going over gravel or through water. There's a mission where you like take a rally buggy up the side of a volcano as it's exploding, and like just the like, what is that called, shale or whatever, the like just crumbly rocks up the side of the volcano, like feels genuinely different than just like a dirt road or a desert or something like that. And I just like that they add narrative to races or missions that like make me care more. You know, when people fawn over Gran Turismo or even the like main Forza Motorsport series, I find them like dull as dishwater, because like, you know, I'll find a car that I like and I just want to drive that. So the idea that I can like tweak the horsepower to give me six extra whatever doesn't do it for me. I need like a little more, and Horizon series has always kind of given that.
Yeah, it's also just really fun to get in a very, very fancy car and just go bunny hopping across the hills, crashing into cacti. Like,
yeah,
feels good. Hey, are you ready for a segue?
Oh, yeah.
Forza Horizon 5 is the most beautiful game on the Xbox Series X to date.
That's probably true. I'd say that's true.
And that is why we're going to talk about the first year, the first birthday of Xbox and PlayStation right after this break. Okay, so do you want to kind of steer the ship on this one? I'm curious where your head's at.
Well, here we are. So we are now a year into the life cycle of both the Xbox Series X, the Xbox Series S, and the PlayStation 5. I think mostly we're going to probably be focusing on the Series X and the PlayStation 5, just because the S is sort of a different thing entirely. Also, I haven't used it, so I don't feel comfortable really speaking to it. But I kind of wanted to just go and take a look at both of these consoles and see how they've done in their first year, and whether we think they are succeeding or failing, or whether one is doing something better than the other one. Yeah, I mean, that's more or less it. So why don't we just start with the most obvious area, and that's games. Which of these two consoles seems to be having the better game experience in terms of releases?
I think like Sony seems like the obvious answer, right? Because they have exclusives.
They have exclusives, yeah. Xbox
Clank
still doesn't have any, correct? In terms of Series X exclusives.
Well, I think Flight Simulator might be exclusive.
No, I'm pretty sure it's not. I think it's on Series S as well.
Oh, sure, right. But I don't think it's on the old consoles.
Oh, that might be true.
But I think, like, yeah, Sony has had releases that feel, even if they aren't technically exclusives, like Spider-Man Miles Morales, that feel
but
like...
Yeah.
PS5 games, and then they have
and they have had true exclusives as well, like Returnal and Ratchet and Clank, as you said. True, those were like true exclusives.
Yeah, so they've had those games. That said, Xbox still has Game Pass, which continues to just feel like a huge advantage. And while maybe Forza Horizon 5 is technically available on the other consoles, Forza Horizon 5, by every definition, looks like a next-gen game.
Sure.
When you're playing it on, you know, an Xbox Series X. Microsoft Flight Simulator certainly looks like a next-gen experience. It's breathtaking. That said, I don't think either of those games are the traditional things people think of when they think of big next generation entertainment, right? They think of, oh God, what an awful phrase. But they think of, you know, big properties. They think of God of War. They think of Halo Infinite, which, you know, is about to come out. But because of that early preview a year ago, I think it now kind of doesn't have the cachet of being a next gen game.
I mean, and it's also multi-platform, like it is coming
and it's multi-platform,
original Xbox One and PC and everything. So it seems like, I think for a first year, I think the PlayStation 5 has done a good job of having those titles that kind of make you feel like you're justifying your purchase. The Deathloops of the world, the, you know, Ratchet, the Demon Souls, you know, even the PS5, you know, enhanced games like Miles Morales. It does feel like those have been there, whereas on the Xbox, for me, I treat the Xbox Series X mostly as like a PC gaming alternative. And at $500 for a very, very capable gaming device, you have a lot of options here that you would probably have to spend $2,000 to get a comparable gaming PC. So I think they are serving two different goals. I think PlayStation 5 is just like a splashier option and continues to be. Like, I think you could probably play a lot of the games that are, you know, Series X games on even on Xbox One or, you know, a previous gen Xbox One or an Xbox, God, all the naming is terrible, Xbox One X, and have a pretty close experience. Whereas on the PlayStation 5, I've played games that like are very clearly could never ever run on a PlayStation 4. You know, the Demon's Souls remake is the biggest one for me. Like, that continues to be just awe-inspiring. Returnal, also like really impressive. You know, but I agree with you with Game Pass. I don't think there's PlayStation is offering anything that is remotely close to the value proposition that Game Pass does, just because if you want to like stay abreast of games and don't want to spend a ton of money, Game Pass is kind of an outrageous deal. And every single month there's been at least one game that was worth playing, if not multiple games that are worth playing. So yeah, I don't know. It's tricky. I think because of Game Pass, if we're including it, I would probably give the edge to Xbox. But again, Game Pass can be experienced on the last gen as well, and most of those games run great on the last gen. So I don't know. I'm torn. You know what? I'm going to change my mind. PlayStation 5 games.
Yeah, I think it's funny what Sony's actually doing though after this year, which is here they had some exclusives for PS5.
Yeah.
And now they're like, no, it's going to come out on PS4 too. Horizon, you know, Zero Dawn 2 coming out on PS4. The new God of War coming out on PS4. I think. I have to wonder if they realized, well, people are going to buy this console no matter what because there's a shortage of it. So we don't have to use the exclusivity as an incentive. And two, I mean, I know that these big games are, you know, designed at a cost to help them move consoles, right? Like,
sure.
I don't know if all of them are big money makers. But at a certain point, like, you do need some copies to sell. And there are just so many PS4s out there and so few PS5s out there that it seems like the business part of it has kind of caught up to them maybe a little bit.
Yeah, I would say, like, you mentioned God of War and you mentioned Horizon Forbidden West. Both of those games have always been PlayStation 4 and PlayStation 5 games. I'm sure they look a hell of a lot better and run a hell of a lot better on PlayStation 5, but they were never presented as like exclusives for the PlayStation 5. I do agree with you that there might have been a time where Sony could have been like, well, actually they were now PlayStation 5 exclusives. Sorry, that is just the bet for the best of the experience. But it does seem like Sony is leaning towards Xbox's, Microsoft's strategy. And just like, let's open the floodgates and get as many people playing these games as possible. And maybe they'll start playing them and be like, you know, this would run a hell of a lot. Like, who knows how Horizon's going to run on a launch PS4? Probably not great. And that might sell a few consoles as well.
Yeah. Oh, I wonder, I mean, speaking of that, play it wherever. we're now seeing Sony put these games on PC too.
Yeah, that's true.
So it's like, I just PC has weirdly become the place, especially if you're patient and you don't need to play it literally at launch, where you can kind of start to assume that everything will be there, either on launch date for Xbox or, you know, maybe a year and a half later on for all the PlayStation games.
Obviously the downside is just to
make that
the spendiness of, like, you know, running these games on PC gets pricey, especially the higher end next gen games. Yeah. So, you know, that's sort of the trade off. I like the brainlessness of console gaming insofar as, like, you know, it's going to work. You don't need to update graphics drivers. It just works. But obviously there's the downside of, you know, it might not look as great. And sometimes it means having to wait for those console patches to come out.
Yeah, I have a question for you. When we talked about these consoles, you know, a year ago, you loved the PlayStation 5's triggers.
Yes.
The adaptive or haptic triggers.
Yeah. Well, we should check the tape. So I did.
Oh,
know.
You loved them. You
okay.
You were gaga for them.
You're right. Yeah. The thing that continues to amaze me about the PlayStation 5 controller and kind of makes it leaps and bounds better than the Xbox controller in this one particular way is not the triggers, but the rumble. The rumble in PlayStation 5 controllers is so much better, just technologically speaking. It feels more realistic, more naturalistic than the Xbox controllers. It made me wish. Actually, this is a good example. So I played Riders Republic on PlayStation 5, and I played Forza, obviously, on Xbox. Riders Republic, with that rumble, feels wild. Like, it really feels, you talk about feeling the road, you really feel the road with that rumble. I felt it on Xbox as well with Forza, but I could tell how much better it would have been with that rumble. Now, the triggers, you're right. Gimmicky for sure. I think developers have been very smart about using them occasionally in interesting and good ways, but whenever there's an instance where, like, I think they're overusing it or it becomes a pain in the ass, I just turn it off, and that's fine.
Yeah, that's where I was getting with it. I just had immense.
I know you wanted to shove it in my face. I get it. It's fine.
I'm just saying I was right. You know what? We were both.
No. I like, look, Bugsnax, if you take a photo in Bugsnax and you, like, you could feel the click of the camera, that's awesome. I want more of that.
That's so true.
Necessarily need to feel the weight of a heavy machine gun in Call of Duty, but clicking a camera to take a picture of Bunker, count me in.
Okay, before we wrap the segment, what do you think people should do? Say they're getting into gaming right now, right?
Yes.
Let's say they don't even have a console, because we do have quite a few listeners who either don't have any video game console, which, if you're listening and that's you, thank you. I don't. You mystify me, and I adore you. And then there are, I think, even more folks who have a Nintendo Switch but don't have anything like this. Would you recommend them getting a kind of like a mid-range PC, one of these consoles, so Xbox Series X, PS5, or just, you know, going out and getting an old PS4 or Xbox One?
Yeah. So if you don't have anything, I would recommend a Switch. I think the Switch is like the best gateway console maybe ever. The portability of it, fact that it works also on a TV, the fact that the games are, like, by and large, very approachable. So Switch would be my number one recommendation. If you have a Switch and you feel like you want to, like, dip your toe into maybe more quote unquote serious games, I don't really believe that, but, like, you know what I mean? Like, hardcore games makes me sick when I say it. I think the solution is probably buy either a Series S if you want to save a little money, or an X if you want something that's going to last for like 3 or 4 or 5 years. Buy that and you buy Game Pass.
Yeah.
I think that, like, is such an easy option. But for just, like, I don't want to have to think about what games I'm buying. Game Pass is going to throw me 3 or 4 or 5 new games a month, and I'll try some of them, and some of them I'll like and some of them I won't like, but it will help you develop a taste for what you're into genre-wise, and it lets you, like, check out a bunch of stuff. So that's like that option. PlayStation 5 is like the McLaren option, which is to say, like, you better know what you're buying it for. Because if you're just buying it because people really like PlayStation, like are buying PlayStation 5s, you know, I think you will have a tough time justifying it, like, for these first couple years while we wait for these releases to come out. Yeah, if it wasn't for Game Pass, it'd be a lot closer. I'd say it's 6.5. But because of Game Pass being an option, you know, man,
yeah,
it really is pretty good. And Microsoft does not pay us any money to say that. It is you'll hear that from a lot of people. It is a genuinely really good thing. And it actually makes me wonder, will that keep up? I remember when Xbox Live and Games with Gold launched 10 years ago, whatever it was, and it started out and the games were so good. The free games you'd get every month were just like, you know, oh, Super Meat Boy and like big indies that I was really psyched about. And over time, those free games have really fallen off. And PlayStation Plus, same thing. It's very hit or miss in terms of whether the free games are good. Sometimes they're great. You know, Hitman 2 was free a month or two ago. That's a great game. It makes me wonder whether Game Pass will be able to keep up the pace. But certainly, you know, purchasing Bethesda is a good way to sort of guarantee that long term.
Yeah, I think the best shot it has at keeping the pace is, yeah, one, it's just going to keep buying studios, so acquisitions will help with that.
Yeah.
Two, the indie market is just huge and in need of money, so I think they just have more options to choose from. And three, look at Netflix, right? Netflix had everything until competitors came around.
Yeah.
And we haven't even begun to see the start of competitors for Game Pass. And I know PlayStation has an option. It is not good. Not good. Yeah. Sony has yet to kind of make, especially that big commitment to, hey, we're going to release our big games day and date. It's telling that MLB The Show, a, you know, longtime PlayStation exclusive, launched day and date on Xbox Game Pass.
Yeah.
Which is just wild, even if you aren't into those sorts of games. So yeah, I agree with y'all. I agree with you on all of that. I certainly would not recommend a PC for a newcomer.
Yeah.
Even though it has any number of advantages, it is, yeah, it's just too much of a headache. So I think that is it for that. It's been a fine year for these consoles, but unlike anything we've ever seen before.
It doesn't feel like a normal year, certainly. And I don't know that it ever will. This kind of bridging the gap between two generations has never happened to this extent before, and it's very bizarre. But on the bright side, it means that a lot of people that don't have the new consoles get to play new games, so people aren't cut out.
Okay, so this is where we share our one recommendation of the week before we get into reader mail. I will keep mine brief. The French Dispatch, the new film by Wes Anderson. It is a collection of shorts loosely inspired by magazines like The New Yorker.
Mm. Would you describe it as twee?
Certainly. I would say that's probably it's you know, the first ingredient on its list of ingredients. But what I really liked about it was it's about writers and editors and their relationship. Obviously, there are the stories that are actually in the short films, but between them are these interactions between Bill Murray, who plays the editor of this fictional magazine, and all of his various writers. And I think that's where the heart of the film lies. I've seen a lot of people call the film cold, but I don't know. I really, really, really connected with it. And I thought it captured the compassion that writers have for writers and the passion that writers have for their careers and their subjects. And I don't feel like I see that very often in film. I think when you see reporting and journalism in film, a lot of the times it's like hard news. You know, it's we're going to all the president's men, we're going to break open this big story. And it's not what the majority of journalism is, which is curious people asking questions about stuff they find interesting and sharing it with the world. And I liked that we got to see that from somebody who is just an immensely talented director. How about you? What else have you been enjoying this week that you'd recommend?
Yeah, it's, I wish I wasn't, it's really tough to like watch stuff at night.
Yeah.
Just cause I talked about watching Succession, which I continue to absolutely adore. But I do want to talk about one other game very quickly, and that game is called Unpacking. It is available on Switch, it's available on PC, and it's on Xbox through Game Pass as well. And the premise is really just you are unpacking a bunch of cardboard boxes in a pixel art apartment. And each level is basically a year in your life. So it starts and you're unpacking your like childhood bedroom, basically, and you're putting toys out and stuff like that. And as it progresses, there's more challenges in terms of finding space for things. And like, I don't want to spoil too much, but like, as an example, you move in, it's not explicitly ever stated, but you move into what is effectively like a single guy's apartment. You know, there's like neon signs on the wall and like weightlifting and a guitar that's like framed. It's like it's a dude apartment. And it's funny because there's just like no room for your stuff. So you're trying to like hang your diploma on the wall and there's nowhere to hang it. So the only place you can put your diploma of all the options is like in a closet somewhere. So there's like this interesting narrative that happens throughout that game that's like very subtle. There's no real dialogue. All you get is like a single line of like writing at the end of each level talking about like your vibe, like how you're feeling when this happened. And I find it very soothing. The great soundtrack that I've been listening to after I played the game. I've just been listening to it on Spotify. The soundtrack's really good for Unpacking. And if you get a lot of satisfaction of like just putting stuff away, and then my favorite part, throwing away cardboard boxes that are now empty. Ooh, man, that is my stuff right there. You can do a lot of that. So yeah, really dig it. Highly recommend Unpacking.
That sounds great. So we got some questions from our listeners, and I'm going to go through those before we wrap the show. The first one is from Lex, who asked, what games would you recommend for someone who didn't play tons of video games as a kid to learn the basic mechanics while still having fun?
This game Unpacking is actually really good for people that aren't necessarily like quote unquote gamers. So that's definitely a suggestion. I had mentioned this in a previous episode, but I'll reiterate it here. Portal 1 and Portal 2, if you ever want to like get into first-person shooter games but feel very intimidated by like all the mechanics, both of those games are like tremendous for that. So I definitely recommend.
I also think, you mentioned the Switch as like the perfect entry space for video games. The great thing about Nintendo's own games, not every Switch game, is that they really do work as stepladders into their genres. So Mario Kart is a great entry point for racing games. You love the Fire Emblem series, which I think is a great entry point into strategy games.
Yeah.
Splatoon is a very friendly and not super violent shooter. So if you want to try these different genres without, you know, jumping into the deep end, all of those games are nice ways to do it. This is a question from Tony. Do you think, quote, fun is the core concept of gaming, or do you sometimes sacrifice that in order for importance or artistic value?
I do think, okay, I would not call fun a core concept. I think it is a very common and important concept. I don't know if I wouldn't say it's a required concept. I don't think every game you play needs to be fun. Every moment needs to be fun. Certainly, you know, Last of Us 2 certainly is not fun for a lot of it. And I think developers certainly sacrifice what would be like a fun experience in favor of telling maybe a more important narrative beat. So,
yeah, I would say that pleasure is a core concept of gaming, and quite honestly, like all of entertainment. And that doesn't mean a thing can't be sad or upsetting, right? But there is pleasure to be had in it. So if you look at like the films of Michael Haneke, who made Funny Games, these, you know, some really violent and upsetting movies, looking at his films is pleasurable, right? And playing The Last of Us 2 is extremely pleasurable. Even though you're seeing all this horrific stuff, it feels very good. You want to keep playing it because it feels good and it looks beautiful. And I think pleasure is the thing that the vast 99.9% of art has in some form. Again, it's kind of a nebulous term. I just think in video games, pleasure also happens to be fun because we are voluntarily stepping into a virtual world, right? So if you're if you're going to do that, you are doing it, I don't say escape like in the escapism sense, but you're doing it because you are wanting access to something that you otherwise wouldn't be able to get in your real life. In real life, not hard to find a lot of like sad things or like menial things or work things, but it can be hard to, you know, get in a car and drive anywhere you want in Mexico. That is fun.
I think for me, if you're going to like your version of pleasure, I think is just like interest. Like it needs, a game needs to be interesting in some way. It needs to keep my interest. If it's boring, whether it, not just for a game, for any piece of art, if it doesn't like spark my imagination or make me think or whatever, it's a failure, complete and utter failure. So that's really all I'm looking for, is like something that is trying to do something. Some of them will be to my taste and some of them won't. But at least like put yourself out there game wise and say like, okay, I'm going to try to like actually take a stand and do or say something that's genuinely interesting. So it doesn't always have to be fun.
A question about, we're staying on the smart people stuff, from Cactus Girly. Is there any book series that you would want turned into a video game? And don't think about it too hard.
Growing up, I loved the Discworld series, Terry Pratchett, which is like a parody of fantasy novels. They've actually made Discworld games. I've not played them. And I don't think they are like standout known as like spectacular releases, but again, I haven't played them, so I won't speak. But I do think that world is so rich that the idea of like a Skyrim, but in that world, would be pretty spectacular. So that's what jumps to mind.
Yeah, mine would be, so there's this book called The Thousand Autumns of Jacob DeZoet, which is by David Mitchell, who did Cloud Atlas. And he actually is a co-screenwriter on the upcoming Matrix movie.
Mm.
But this book is, it seems at first like one of his more, I don't know, not plain, but not science fiction-y or not, you know, fantastical. It is set in the 18th century, and it's on this like Dutch trading, I guess, inlet or island on the coast of Japan. And it's like very, very small, because Japan did not allow the Dutch into the rest of Japan. It was a controlled port for trade. And when I read that, I just kept coming back to the idea of how wonderful a setting this would be for a video game, because it's such a unique environment. You know, it's like it is a place between worlds. It's not Japan. It's not Dutch. It is its own little thing. And there's just immense conflict because of the skepticism on all parties and each party trying to, you know, get the best of the other. And then gradually the book does introduce some of Mitchell's wilder ideas. That is like a thing that I will never get adapted into a video game, but I have always kind of dreamt would be getting that treatment. Just very quick answer for us on this one from Spinosaurus Dan. What's your favorite anime?
It's Cowboy Bebop, which I talked about on a previous episode. But if you're going to hold me to pick another one, because I already talked about it, I would say Samurai Champloo, which is from the same creator of Cowboy Bebop. You mentioned, you know, that era in Japan. Samurai Champloo is actually focused entirely of that era of the outside world slowly sort of having its influence affect Japanese culture and sort of the death of that era of samurai. So super, super great. Amazing music. It's awesome series.
I've only begun to get into anime again in the last kind of couple of years. I guess during the pandemic, I liked it a bit in junior high. But Keep Your Hands Off Isekai, which maybe I've talked about on the show, which is about a group of, it's three young girls in high school who decide to create their own anime creation club. Like they actually draw and animate anime. It is so delightful. And even better, it's on HBO Max. So you, if you are not the type of person who has Crunchyroll just yet, or in any, you know, Funimation, anything like that, this is a good way for you to try a great series and kind of whet your appetite to the form.
Before we move on for this, I do want to one quick mention. Several resties ago, we talked about, we were struggling to come up with a good live action anime recreation. In the context of we were talking about the Cowboy Bebop live action show that's coming to Netflix. And people very rightly called out Speed Racer, the movie, is more or less the best example of an anime turned live action that anyone can come up with. I certainly agree with that. So well done, everyone that suggested Speed Racer. And with that, I wanted to thank the following people for writing reviews on Apple Podcasts. Specifically, I know a lot of these people called out the Resties, which we really, really appreciate. It feels great. Tiny Cuffs, New York Giraffe Fan, Dwight W. Davis, Nick Colas, Jospy, Abby Oaks, Red the Rose, Clay 3476, The Uncool, and Bernie S. Ports, something like that. Thank you. And thank you to everyone else who has written reviews. That was a double length one because I know I forgot to name names the last time we did Resties, but really, really appreciate the reviews.
Okay, so here's what we talked about this week. We spoke about Forza Horizon 5, the car racing game, and Riders Republic, the bike and people and snow racing game. We also spoke about the anniversaries of the Xbox Series X and PlayStation 5, mentioning games like Demon's Souls, and very briefly, I guess, Microsoft Flight Simulator, Ratchet and Clank, stuff like that. We also spoke about the French Dispatch and Unpacking, and got a few shout-outs for stuff like Portal and Nintendo games like Mario Kart. And that's it. I mean, we talked about our favorite anime, you know, Cowboy Bebop, Keep Your Hands Off Isekai. And, you know, maybe I had buried one bonus question here from Cuddly as a Cactus asking for my real favorite Criterion top 10. I'm not going to give that right here. That's so many things to say. But I will say a good starting point is The Night of the Hunter and High and Low. So maybe I do have an answer. That's it. That's it for this episode. We did it. We did it again. It's another episode of The Resties in the books. Because taglines are hard. I don't have really any way to outro this episode. Next week, which is actually 2 weeks because that's the cadence, we're going to be talking about something. What is it? I don't know. That's a great question. Maybe Battlefield?
Maybe.
You'll just have to tune in to find out. Otherwise, I hope you have a wonderful week. A delightful weekend after that. And the holidays are almost here. So get that holiday music playing. Hanukkah comes early this year. It is a great time to be smiling. We will see you next time.